James Loewen is a sociologist and historian who authored the book Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. He keeps up a website where he continues to research and confirm suspected sundown towns with help from readers and residents in these towns. Why is it so important to chronicle this part of a town's history? Loewen mentions Ferguson, Missouri as an example of what he calls second-generation sundown town problems. Ferguson was briefly a sundown town between 1940 and 1960. Loewen says the black population was thrown out by the white population. He says the separation was enforced by an overwhelmingly white police force, which would ticket and harass black motorists for passing through the town.
Well, by the time Ferguson had the shall we say, riot or demonstrations, for which they are now famous, Ferguson was almost two-thirds black, but it still had that leftover from the sundown town day police force. So that's an example of a second-generation sundown town problem.
Jacoby Williams is a professor of African-American and African diaspora studies at Indiana University and specializes in social justice, politics, and civil rights. He explains the relationship policing had to sundown towns during their heyday and how it relates to the distrust of policing we're seeing today.
So, for example, if a person, and this is anecdotal, but these are real-life experiences, a person of color is in a particular location that's classified as a sundown town, and the people of that community attack that person, the police will not arrest them. In fact, they may arrest the person who was attacked.
Today, Williams says this translates as law enforcement who may harass people of color for being in areas they don't think they belong in by following them out of town, searching them without proper explanation, or giving them tickets. He says the civil rights movement in the 1960s and the Black Lives Matter movement we're seeing today are mirror images of each other as they continue to fight for many of the same issues.
The difference between the two periods now is folks are calling for defunding the police, whereas in the earlier generations in the 60s, for example, and beyond, folks were advocating for community control of policing. So defunding the police and community control is still similar, whereas defunding the police is asking that those resources be allocated to certain entities in the community so the community can police themselves. And in the 60s, having community control of police was the same, having people who are from the community do most of the policing themselves to avoid these confrontations.
Loewen also says that the ongoing legacy of these towns is often misunderstood and damaging. He uses Kenilworth, Illinois, as an example. Loewen says Kenilworth is the richest suburb of Chicago, which 5 years ago didn't have a single black household. After hearing time and again that Kenilworth is just too expensive for black families, Loewen decided to do his own research.
And I found that there are 7,000 black households, black families, in the Chicago area that make more money than the median family does in Kenilworth. So they could not only move into Kenilworth in terms of economics, they could move into the upper half of Kenilworth, into the larger houses. But they don't.
Still, the explanation of just not rich enough not only persists, but is then passed down to younger generations to continue to sow the belief that people of color are economically inferior.
So we have to realize that we're not talking about racism in the distant past. We're talking about racism in a fairly recent past that still affects the fortunes of black folks and white folks today.
As protests took place across the nation at the beginning of the summer, Huntington, Indiana was not immune, even as a mostly white community and former sundown town. Mayor Richard Strick says they saw what was happening in other communities and were able to plan out a response to the protest. He says Huntington's law enforcement community recognized that people coming out to protest had a just cause and are passionate about justice.
We wanted to make sure that we supported them as they exercised their constitutional rights and freedoms and helped them to do so in a way that kept them safe and kept the community at large safe as well, also knowing that there was likely to be, and there was, counter-protesters.
Strick says they were able to set law enforcement up in designated areas, intentionally dressed in casual clothing to make them more approachable to encourage dialogue. Their sheriff and chief of police were able to reach out to organizers and help plan things, as well as supply water. Strick says he believes the protest was a sign of progress for the city because of the number of people who showed up, but also that it means there's still a lot of work to be done. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Ella Abbott.